If you assume that an ancient story like this story of the golden calf is far too old and far too out of date to have anything to do with us today, I invite you to think with me this morning about how closely and clearly such a story speaks to our day. The story has Moses standing next to God on top of Mount Sinai, and you expect Moses to be pulling his hair out as he and God are looking down, and they see this scene down in the valley of the people worshiping the golden calf. God observes the crowd dancing around the golden calf and calls them stiff-necked people and virtually growls at Moses. "Now let me alone," says God, "so that my wrath may burn hot against them." As if God is not capable of having wrath burning against them as long as Moses is standing there with him. We don't know what caused Moses' brother Aaron to turn against his brother Moses. Perhaps it was a case of sibling rivalry. That's what Frederick Buechner, the novelist, thinks. A case of sibling rivalry where Moses gets all the credit and poor old Aaron does all the work but doesn't get any credit. But what we do know is that it had to do with power and control. There was no question that the God of Sinai was powerful, but the God of Sinai was not controllable. And over the centuries, we noticed that people like to have a God that they can control. Isn't it interesting that as long as God was leading them out of slavery, as long as God was providing manna for them to eat, they were fine with this God. But no sooner did God give them some ethical guidelines in the form of the Ten Commandments that they were ready to fall down before a golden calf. The Hebrew word really refers to a golden bull, a young bull. And there was nothing unusual about that. Just about every culture around the Mediterranean basin worshipped a bull in some way. A snorting bull was a pervasive symbol of power and sexual virility in that ancient world. Still is, you know. Consider the statue of the Wall Street Bull in Manhattan. What a symbol. It is 11 feet tall, with nostrils flaring, and its wickedly long, sharp horns are ready to gore. Its tail is curved like a lash. And this contemporary bull shows an aggressive, even a belligerent force on the move, and symbolizes unpredictability. You never know what's going to happen. That's not a bad symbol for the stock market. The bull in the biblical story, like any bull market today, was made up of the gold and jewelry of the people. Aaron had the bull fashioned into a deity. And for them, that deity represented a powerful, sexually active, and promiscuous God who would not burden them with any ethical guidelines and certainly no call for a covenant commitment to live together in peace and justice. This God cared nothing for the poor, the stranger, or the sick. This God that they made was mute in the face of any behavior they chose. And choose it they did. The enigmatic biblical phrase that says that they rose up to rebel has definite sexual connotations in the original language. So, with no ethical guidelines, no restrictions on their behavior, these people reveled before the golden bull, celebrating not just freedom, but license to do anything in the world they wanted to do. So, what contemporary meaning can we take away from this primitive story? What does this picture of the golden bull linger in our consciousness? What is it about this story that can still speak to a tech-friendly 21st century world? Well, let's start with this. The problem here was not irreligion. There was plenty of religion dancing around that golden calf. So when you hear someone say that all religion is basically the same, you'll know better. All religion is not basically the same. The worship of the golden bull is not the same as the worship of the God of Sinai. They're different. To use the imagery of this story, how do we know when religion is worshiping the golden bull and when religion is worshiping the God of Sinai? How do we distinguish between the two? What is good religion and what is bad religion? This is a question raised repeatedly by thoughtful people. Some critics seem to see only bad religion. They assume that religion equals bad. If it's religion, it's got to be bad, they think. No one of us would even attempt to deny the critics who claim that religion can be bad. Of course it can be. Clearly, bad religion has led to bloody wars, cruel persecutions, human sacrifice, and hypocrisy. And it can be narrow-minded, selfish, and intolerant. We all know that. Sheer cruelty and brutal murder practiced by bullies claiming to represent Islam can make our stomach turn and be an embarrassment to faithful Muslims around the world. No one denies that there is bad religion out there. After all, bad religion is exactly what Jesus confronted. I doubt that he ever met an atheist. It wasn't irreligion that he confronted, it was bad religion. If you read the gospel stories closely, you will see that Jesus is constantly trying to bring people back to good religion. Listen to him address bad religion. Woe to you, scribes and Pharisees, hypocrites, for you tithe mint, dill, and cumin, and have neglected the weightier matters of the law, justice and mercy and faith. So let us think together about good religion. Out of the mysterious smoke and thunder of Sinai, came Moses with the Ten Commandments, chiseled in stone. From those Ten Commandments came a prophetic disposition articulated by people that we know as the prophets in the Old Testament. They spoke very clearly about what good religion is. Here, for example, Isaiah. What to me is the multitude of your sacrifices, says the Lord? I've had enough of your burnt offerings of rams and the fat of fed beasts. Cease to do evil. Learn to do good. Seek justice. Rescue the oppressed. Defend the orphan. Plead for the widow. That was Isaiah. And consider Micah. He has told you, O mortal, what is good, and what does the Lord require of you but to do justice, to love mercy, and to walk humbly with your God. Good religion passionately cares about justice, mercy, and humility. Good religion cares about the poor and the needy, the overlooked and the oppressed. This is the prophetic tradition, and it is clearly the tradition for which Jesus lived and died. Bad religion stood at the foot of the cross and said, "He saved others, he cannot save himself." Bad religion must have walked down the road and looked up at Golgotha, seen those three crosses up there on top of the hill, ducked their heads, and kept on walking, because they knew they couldn't do anything about it. Just the way we duck our heads and ignore the injustices of our world. Good religion stays focused on justice and mercy and humility. And so it has been true for over 2,000 years. For the last two centuries, it has been assumed by Western culture that as society becomes more scientific and technological, people will become more secular and less religious. On the surface, the decline in church attendance might lead us to believe that assumption. But church attendance, although in decline, does not mean that religion has actually decreased. In fact, studies have shown that religion / spirituality has actually increased over the last 200 years. So we have no lack of religion. The problem is we lack good religion. Just as the story we read today about the golden bull represents bad religion, I want to leave you today with a picture, a word picture, of an example of good religion. Here is a word picture that was written 2 years ago that quickly caught on and traveled the internet and has become well known throughout the whole world. And it's read and reread every fall at the beginning of the school year. I'm talking about a letter that was written by Nelba Marquez Green to school teachers everywhere, and here is a condensed version of it. She says, "I lost my 6-year-old daughter, Anna Grace, on December 14, 2012, in the rampage at Sandy Hook Elementary School. My son, who was in the building and heard the shooting, survived. While waiting in the firehouse that day to hear the official news that our daughter was dead, my husband and I made promises to ourselves, to each other, and to our son. We promised to face the future with courage, faith, and love. As teachers and school employees begin this new year, my wish for you is that same courage, faith, and love. Parents are sending their precious children to you this fall. Some will come fully prepared and others not. They will come fed and with empty bellies. They will come from intact homes and fractured ones. Love them all. Then she concluded her letter with this. A few weeks before the shooting, Anna Grace and I shared a special morning. Lunches were packed and clothes were picked out the night before, so we had extra time to snuggle. And while I lay in bed with my beautiful caramel princess, she sensed that I was distracted and asked, "What's the matter, Mom?" I remember saying to her, "Nothing, baby, it's just work." She looked at me for a very long time with a thoughtful stare. Then she told me, "Don't let them suck your fun circuits dry, Mom." As you begin this school year, remember Anna Grace. Walk with courage, with faith, and with love, and don't let them suck your fun circuits dry. She was writing that letter to teachers everywhere, but she could very well have been writing it to every last one of us. This is good religion. And it happens not just among teachers and school workers to whom she was writing, but in homes and offices and labs and hospitals and on farms and in the air. And thank God, it happens in churches, good churches, like this one. We all worry about events in the news over which we have very little influence and no control. It can be frustrating and frightening. But there are some things over which we do have influence and even some control. We can practice good religion every day. There are people to help children and youth to respect and love and guide, patients to treat, clients to deal with honestly, colleagues to honor, friends to care for, and family members to love. There are grateful notes to write, kind words to type, compliments to tweet, and hugs to give. These are all daily actions of good religion. Good religion is confidence that life has meaning because whatever we may face, life has a divine origin and a divine destiny. Whatever we may face, we have the divine promise of Christ Himself. I am with you always. And if little Anna Grace were living and speaking with us today, she might remind us that in the midst of all our busy lives, don't let them suck your fun circuits dry.